Okay, good morning, everyone. This is the media conference call on the Afghan elections. My name is Tom Carver, I'm Vice President here at Carnegie, and I have with me in the room Sarah Chase from our South Asia program, who has spent many years in Afghanistan and is familiar to you all, and Frederick Greer, who's the director of the program. And also, I'm pleased to say we have a Pashtun Atif, who is working with Sarah, who is in Kabul at the moment, has works for an international NGO there and has had 7 years working on the ground in the humanitarian field. So this call is on the record. It'll last for 30 minutes. Obviously the aim is to give you guys a chance to talk to Sarah and Pashtun and Frederick and to get your questions across. But maybe we just start with a kind of opening couple of comments from everyone about, you know, how significant these elections are, because a lot has been made about the importance of them, the fact that they're potentially the first time that democratic power will be transferred democratically. Sarah, do you think they are significant?
Well, I think Afghan elections tend to surprise in surprising ways, and it's usually because Western observers and, in particular, policymakers set great store by them, and it's a kind of great white hope, you know, that somehow the election is going to magically transform the landscape. I don't think this one will. I think the real surprise is going to be continuity in the real holders of power.
Frederick?
Well, I think, to bring it on a slightly positive note, and I entirely agree with what Sarah said, I mean, the only positive outcome that is to be expected from this election is a continuation of the state as such. And for us, maintain the level of viability that it has had so far. That is a real stake, and this is where all the questions
are. Me too. The gas meter's outside, so.
Hello. Okay, keep going, Frederick.
Yes, that's all I wanted to say. I mean, the only positive thing in this election is that it is necessary to save the state as it is, and therefore there is a need to transfer power one way or the other. Whether the election will be the great transformative event that everybody expects is, I think, delusional.
Pashtun, how does it seem to you from the ground?
Hi. Just before I comment, can I ask Sarah, you and to speak a bit loudly because I could not really hear anything.
Oh,
and,
okay.
In terms of election.
So
the question is whether you feel these elections are going to be as significant as people, commentators in the West, are making out.
Well, I think when we talk about the importance of this election for Afghans, you know, whom we witnessed during this past 2 months, who participated quite enthusiastically in rallies and campaigns supporting one candidate or another, it's very, very significant. However, what it results in does not seem to be very helpful or significant. So it's, for the people, it's very important, but I'm not sure if the results will be as interesting as the election itself or the people or how the people are enthusiastic about it right now.
Okay. Thank you. Sarah and Frederick, can you just give us some thoughts? I mean, we're all familiar with the main candidates, but do you have any thoughts on anyone you want to single out particularly as, you know, candidates in this election? Any comments you want to make about the individuals?
No, I mean, again, I mean, there is nothing really surprising there. The main three candidates are Rasul, Ghani, and Abdullah. What is absolutely extraordinary in this business, whatever the ultimate outcome, is that Rasul may be in this league, simply because he is the one with the smallest popular base within Afghanistan. And this is, again, where a number of question marks start, because everybody wonder what it means in terms of the organization, the election, and so on and so forth.
Meaning, I think, you have someone who's a front runner, who's really not very well known throughout the country. He doesn't have much of an independent political base. and yet he's the front runner. So how does that come about? I think Pashtun can describe this better than I can, but when you start looking at the rallies and who actually attended rallies and who was bussed in from what places and things like that, you see once again, as in 2009, a significant use of the instruments of state power to influence the way this election goes. So it's almost, and just to sort of draw out what I think Pashtun was saying, it's almost as, or elaborate on it, it's almost as though you've got two separate stories happening at the same
right.
time that are overlaying. One is the genuine participation of the Afghan people in spite of 2009 and all of the disappointments then. They are really mobilizing. They're really getting out. They're enthusiastic. Their hope springs eternal. It's touching and moving as a testament, I think, to the ability of the Afghan people to still believe in these processes, while at the same time, under that surface, you have the machinery. I mean, you can hear the levers being ground, you know, to ensure a certain outcome. And those levers are not perfectly coordinated or perfectly aligned, but I think there is much more structure beneath the surface of what happens in Afghanistan than meets the eye.
Is that your sense, Pashtun?
Yes. That's how I see it as well, totally.
So the crowds that you're seeing there, there are kind of, as Sarah says, there's two things going on. There's a genuine outpouring and desire to take part, but then there's other people who are being bussed in to give the appearance of popularity for the main candidate.
Among other types of sleight of hand.
Is that right, Pashtun?
Yes, so. Yeah, so now, I mean, I've been talking to people and there are, you know, you talk to some people, some groups of people who actually want a change and who are participating in these campaigns and rallies voluntarily just because they want to change something, just because they want to see new faces in the government. But there are also people who are, especially on the candidate side, I mean, I've been talking to some people who are involved in these campaigns, and they themselves do not believe that they are going to win the election through these campaigns or through votes. So they are trying to, even though they are doing the campaigns, making big rallies and gathering people, they still are trying to find their way in the system or to go with the system in order to win this election. So they themselves do not believe that this election could be won by
popular mandate. Okay. Frederick?
Well, I think it's important to underline that there's a gap between the expectations, and there are benign democratic expectations within the country with benign expectations.
Genuine
expectation regarding the day-to-day life of the people in terms of security, economic well-being, and so on. And the actual mechanism of the election, it goes far beyond who is going to be elected or not elected. This is a question of further legitimacy of the state. This is the capacity of the state to resist to whatever pressure will be put on itself by the insurgency. This is not something that we're going to see tomorrow after the election. It's something that will come in the months to come, as there is a risk at some point that the state itself may not collapse all of a sudden, but suddenly be reduced to a very, very limited role.
Mm.
I'd like to come back just a second on, you wanted to talk about the individuals a little bit. So we talked about Rasool, who has worked for President Karzai since day one, basically, quite a weak character, kind of pliable and malleable, quite elderly. You have Ashraf Ghani, who has this incredibly bizarre profile of a guy who claims to be opposed to President Karzai, and yet he's worked for him not quite since day one, but just about. And so he likes to cast himself as an opposition figure, while obviously not being that. He has Dostum as his main vice presidential candidate. This guy, although he has a lot of support among the Uzbek minority community, which is about approximately 10% of the population, is otherwise remembered for incredibly both bloody deeds and double dealing during the jihad. So what you're looking at is the kind of institutionalization of a decision not to move in the direction of transitional justice. We are not going to talk about what anybody did in past wars. We're going to rehabilitate them all. That's going to have, I think, you know, places these people have left scars on the landscape that are remembered, and that's going to have an impact. And then you have Abdullah Abdullah, you know, sort of perennial opposition figure, also quite weak-willed. So you don't have, you know, who is seen to represent the sort of Northern Alliance, the Northern factions. There are people on there on the ground in Afghanistan who, you know a lot more than I do. But what I can say is that that coalition is not a unified one. And so the degree to which Abdullah Abdullah represents, between quotation marks, the North is a questionable one, too.
Okay. Okay, well, let's open it up to questions. Does anyone want to? This is obviously on the record, and please mute your phone as you guys have been doing when you're not speaking. Anyone want to start the questions?
Yeah, hello, this is Rod Nordland calling.
Hey, Rod.
From
Hi, Rod. Kabul.
Hi, Sarah, how are you doing?
Great, how are you?
Good. Yeah, just, you know, for what they're worth, some of the polls that have been done are suggesting that Rasool is going to be a distant third, and that, you know, there are much bigger shares for Abdullah and Ghani. What do you think, how much of a conundrum is this going to be if Rasool seems, if it really does get clobbered in the elections? And do you think that's going to be a destabilizing factor?
I again don't think that that's how it's going to work out. I think that polls in Afghanistan, number one, are unbelievably unreliable. I mean, I've never seen a poll that I thought had any relationship to reality, either in its methodology or in its results. So that's one point. And the other point is, even if it were accurate, it's, as Pashtun just said, what people actually put in ballot boxes is only going to have a indirect relationship to the result that comes out. And so I just, and again, the notion that the United States government put all this money into polling, it's interesting because it adds to this climate of a real electoral campaign. But given what we just said about the lack of connection between the two narratives, I just don't think you can look at polls and think of them as having any relationship to what's going to happen.
You can also look at the process slightly differently. One of the key questions, and I think that was quite implicit in our introduction, was the degree by which Karzai himself would be able to play a role in post-Karzai Afghanistan.
Exactly.
And from that perspective, Rasool is also the first choice because he's the weakest in terms of electoral base, but it doesn't fundamentally alter anything if any of the three wins. And of course, this will be slightly different if Ghani wins, because he's probably much more strong-willed than any of the two others. And, coalition with Dostum, I mean, who is notably unreliable, ask Najibullah.
Exactly.
Then it's going to be a matter of degree rather than a question of substance.
I would agree with that. And even Ghani, I think he likes to project this sort of opposition flavor, but he also is quite susceptible to constraints that might be placed on him. And I think Karzai's pretty effective at coming up with the right constraints.
Okay.
What is Pashtun? What do you feel about the discrepancy between the polling and the likely outcome?
Pashtun, can you hear us? Okay.
Leap in if you can.
Let's move on.
Move on, but yeah, leap in.
Okay, so anyone else? Another question?
Hi, this is Paul Shinkman at U.S. News.
Hi, Paul.
Thanks very much for doing the call. I've been interested hearing so many U.S. leaders talking about the importance of this election, not just for the election itself, but for Afghanistan moving forward. With Karzai's refusal to sign the BSA, a lot of people have said, well, let's just wait around to see who comes up next. And I wonder if there's a sense among the Afghan people that this is more than just an election to choose the next president, but rather, you know, could kind of be the bellwether for the, you know, the entire future of Afghanistan and U.S. participation there. What is the mood on the ground like with that regard?
That would be a
Pashtun. Pashtun, can you hear us? No. Okay. Sarah,
I can.
Okay. Do you want to answer?
Hi, Pashtun.
Did you hear the question?
I didn't hear the question.
Okay, the question was about the continued U.S. involvement and whether the election is likely to, how the election is likely to implement,
not
affect that.
Quite. It was, what's the feeling on the ground about whether the election will really result in a change for the future of Afghanistan and whether Afghans think the election is about keeping the U.S. there?
Yeah.
Well, one thing that almost every candidate has said, except for one, that if they win the election, they will sign the BSA. So what people are hoping to happen, that whoever comes and wins the election will sign the BSA, which will allow for the U.S. presence in the country. So that's one hope that people have from this election.
Do they see it as something that will transform the country, put the country on a new footing, the election?
I don't think if a lot of people believe that there will be a significant difference or a significant change come out of this election, but I think they just want to see that, and they do not want the U.S. to lead the country along, which is the current situation seems like it. So they hope that at least the U.S. will be here, will stay here, and will provide its support. But a lot of people do not see this election to bring about a huge difference, a huge change.
And how much is the election about the U.S. role? Is the U.S. role a big feature in the election?
I won't be able to say it's a big thing, but I can say that's one hope that people have. That's one good thing that people think can happen after this election and whoever wins, because all those candidates said that they will sign the BSA. So what people are saying that at least this will be secured, at least our relations with the United States will be secured, will be there, that nothing else happens, and that's especially in the case if Zulmay Rasul wins, which people say that it will be pretty much the same government.
Right. Okay. Paul, did that answer your question?
You know, to be honest, I actually couldn't hear Pashtun very well. His line came, it was kind of breaking up on my end. Could you hear him okay?
Yeah, you want me to recap it? Yeah.
If you don't mind, yeah, that would be very helpful.
Sure. He said basically that it's a significant factor, maybe not the most important factor, but a factor in how Afghans see this election is because all of the candidates but one said that they would sign the BSA, that Afghans feel that this election will at least, as he put it, secure the relationship with the United States, and that that's something very important that they're looking forward to from this election. But they don't see the election as delivering a gigantic change, not putting the country onto any kind of new footing or anything like that. More continuity than change, except with respect to the U.S. relationship, which he said was particularly significant in the case of Zulmay Rasul, which according to Pashtun, would practically be the same administration, except that Zomer Rasool has said that he would sign the BSA.
Well, I think it calls for an additional comment, which is that, I mean, if people are not really voting for a candidate because they know it's going to be a continuity with all the dissatisfaction that has been expressed already over the past few months and years, and expect the U.S. to just stay there as a reassuring factor, and I can understand that, I think it's legitimate, at the same time, they are exposing themselves to some disillusion because no matter what,
exactly.
The BSA might at best be a reassuring factor for white, but there are limits to what it will be able to achieve in any case. So if this is seriously a strong component of the vote, then there are reasons to be worried about the future, and the willingness and capacity of the people to mobilize behind the regime if the violence increases.
And I would say, just from experience from 2009, there was a collective nervous breakdown after that election. It was unbelievably palpable, the disappointment in the population, as well as they might know how what everything looked like and how rigged it appeared that it was going to be. There was this sort of illogical hope and enthusiasm even then. And I have to say, October, November, December 2009, I saw a real shift in people's attitudes toward everything. I mean, you saw people almost re-engineering their lives. And I don't think that has been remembered very well in the time afterwards, where Karzai was able fairly effectively to paint 2009 as a case of international interference with an Afghan process, whereas that is not how Afghans experienced it. And I just think that can sometimes be misleading.
Okay. Other questions?
Hi, this is Feng Wang from Bloomberg News.
Hi, go ahead.
So how much would you say that the Afghans have learned their lesson from the previous election, and just trying to get a sense of, you know, after the runoffs or whatever that takes place and that concludes the election, how long will the transition period take before the government starts to really stabilize, and would that potentially affect, you know, the December 2014 timeline at all?
Frederick?
Well, I think this is the wrong way to ask the question. I think the real question is, will the government be able to stabilize, and not how long it will take for it to stabilize. And you can expect some arrangement to take place, whatever the exact order at the end of the process of the three main candidates that we mentioned. There will be some rearrangement. If you look at who supports whom today, Kanuni was in the loyal position to Kaza until recently. He is now the vice president under this regime, meaning that he has found a modus vivendi with him. And you've got a series of candidates like that who have been shifting from one ad hoc alliance to another one. This kind of dynamic is going to play out right after the election in any case, and it's difficult to predict what it's going to be like. But what is very uncertain today is whether the government will be able to stabilize at all. Yes, there will be a government, most likely. Yes, they will form something of some value for some time. The question is really how deep this will go. And there are reasons to be skeptical about that.
And what about the second question about the relationship between that and the deadline of December?
I mean, the deadline of December is a complicating factor, because if you have a deadline, then you're indicating your opponent that you're leaving anyway. And there are good reasons to believe that the pressure on the government will increase as we get closer to the deadline. It's obvious that if you're in the insurgency, the first thing you will test the solidity of the new government. And then, again, whoever wins, whatever the final arrangement, you will have a period when the pressure will increase. And the question mark is whether the government will be able to all not under pressure. And we cannot say no right now. We cannot say yes with 100% certainty. This is really the way this will happen that will be decisive for the future of the country.
And that testing, I would say, it's going to, you know, there are two different ways that it could go. It could go testing peripheral areas. For example, Kandahar, which was is the former Taliban stronghold, has been quite Taliban, relatively Taliban-free in the last number of months. And the question is, do they move back into Kandahar? Do they move in more significantly in the east and along the ring road? Or do they work in Kabul in a variety of ways through spectacular attacks like they've been doing, but also could they be working through kind of fifth column figures who are, for example, the current interior minister is very close to the Pakistani government. And so there are ways also of almost investing the government from within, which can also be part of these negotiations that or deal making that Frederick is alluding to.
Okay. Other questions?
One follow up, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well then, back to my question of basically, you know, lessons learned and things like that. Since on the ground, would you say that the risks of like what Frederick said on whether the government will be able to stabilize or not, and the risks that come with when they don't stabilize or they're not able to stabilize, would you say that there is a consensus among voters on how crucial that is? And while it'll be difficult to tell, depending on what the results of the election will be, that this is one of the priorities?
I'd also just like to go back and on lessons learned, the people, because I forgot that you had framed your question that way, the people who really didn't learn the lessons are international decision makers. I mean, it's absolutely shocking to me the degree to which they have blundered into this election without taking, you know, kind of minimal precautions that we wouldn't show or have a repeat of 2009. And the degree to which international commentators and decision makers are once again touting this as a gigantic positive game changer based on almost no hard evidence. So that's where lessons really have not been learned. Among Afghans, I'm not sure that the degree of concern about potential implosion, which there's a lot of concern, whether that or sort of fraying, as Frederick might put it differently, I'm not sure that concern is yet translating into more constructive ways of working together going forward.
But if we're talking of an election, what is absolutely obvious in everything we hear, read, and say, which is there is a complete disconnect between the political demand on the one side
right.
and the political offer on the other one. So it's not so much a question of have the Afghans learned their lesson. I mean, the Afghans, like everybody else, they want security, they want well-being, and so on and so forth, and they have realized that they got it very imperfectly in the previous under the previous regime. Now, is the political offer, which is on the table, capable and willing to provide that? Well, this is to be seen as usual.
I guess another way of looking at it is, do you think the state is any stronger than it was 3 or 4 years ago at the last election?
I don't. And I think as part of the continuity that we're likely to see post-election, I think you will see a fragile and contested political order, which, as Frederick suggests, the more fragile and contested it is, the less robust it will be to withstand whatever pressures are put on it, be it by Taliban, be it by other activities of neighbors, not just Pakistan, but especially Pakistan.
I want to insist on one point here. When you speak of the state, I mean, there is a state machinery, and there is no question that some progress has been made on that. But, I mean, this points out to the big, big, big mistake which has been done, which is the neglect of the political consolidation. And this is where the state is no longer, is probably no stronger than it was some years ago, and where all the fragility comes about, because everything else may be not good, but better than it was. It is, if there is no viable political system, then this might explode very quickly or implode, I mean, as you want to put it.
Okay.
And just one more word on that.
we've got time for one more question.
Okay,
let's just see if there's anyone else wants to talk.
Matt Rosenberg from the New York Times. Hi, Sarah.
Hey.
How are you?
I've got a question. What would you guys, if you were the Interactive Committee, what would you have done differently given, you know, the last year of the Karzai government has been increasingly hostile. They really want the foreigners to butt out, and it's very apparent. And, you know, their power of the Interactive Committee seems increasingly limited to, we'll withdraw money. That's the only lever they have. So what would you have done differently to get ready for this election if you were them? Because you said you don't think they prepared very well.
Well, I think they're, you know, in terms of the election, there are a lot. Who paid for the election, right? I mean, so
yeah.
I actually do think that conditionality on what the international community is facilitating is a minimum. But the other main thing, and I think Frederic will talk about this in more detail, is this fixation. You know, so on the election itself, if you've got your name on it, which we have put our names on it, we as the international community, then you have to require minimum standards of freedom and fairness, you know, or else you're just making a travesty of democratic principles as well as democratic processes. But otherwise, I would say the fixation on bilateral negotiations with the Taliban, with the election as the sole other means of getting, of allowing other stakeholders to participate in a political process, that was a very mistaken architecture.
Agreed.
What would you have done differently there?
Well, the one thing that could have been done differently is the initiation of an inclusive political process much earlier in the debate. I mean, for an election to work relatively smoothly, it requires a minimal consensus among all political actors as to what the system is, the degree of acceptance of basic things as to what defines us collectively as a nation. And then in that context, you can accept things. Then this political dialogue never existed. When it was tried, it was reduced between an attempt to have the government talk to the Taliban. In other words, you gave a government whose power was declining
and legitimacy was declining.
And whose legitimacy was declining an overwhelming importance in front of an insurgency which was important, of course, but which was just that, an insurgency, at the exclusion of all political actors.
Exactly.
Which meant that you gave those two actors a totally undue importance. And anyway, even if you could still consider they were the two main important actors, you could have changed the political dynamic in the country by introducing this political dialogue much earlier on. Now, the dynamic within the country, because of the election too, is changing, and it is going to be increasingly difficult to resume that, especially if it is difficult or even impossible to really stabilize the country, because the balance of power within the various forces in the country will make it increasingly difficult. And that's what we could have done differently.
Okay. Okay, we're over time on the media call. Obviously, many other issues that could be covered. If you want to carry on talking to Sarah and Frederic, you can always contact them through Clara or contact them yourselves directly. But for the moment, that's the end of the call, and we'll put a transcript up within the next few hours. Okay. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining in.
Thanks, guys and gals.
Bye-bye.